Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation I-Corps Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Jennifer Knox's new poetry collection, Crushing It, is hilarious, disturbing, touching, and more than occasionally profane. She has written poetry inspired by decidedly unpoetic topics like cannibalism, heavy metal music, ADHD, and more. She teaches at Iowa State University, and she and her husband run a small spice company called Salt Liquors. And tonight she'll be reading and talking through an event sponsored by Writers at Grinnell and Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. It is a virtual public event at 7 p.m. You can find out how to attend on the Prairie Lights Bookstore webpage. She is on the line with me now. Jennifer, hello.
Hi, Charity. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And I think we should dive right in with a poem because I think that'll help people understand a little bit about what you do. And I would love for you to read
Good
us
idea.
The poem that gives the book its title. I would love for you to read Crushing It.
Crushing It. I think later on in our conversation, I'm just going to preface this poem with saying that there's three kinds of poems in the new book. One is entirely invented. Another is half invented, half truth. And then there are the poems that are all true. This is a half truth, half invented. And it's where the book gets its title, Crushing It. I don't want to brag, but I'm pretty sure I got the highest score ever on the ADHD test. The best part was when Mike asked me to juggle a hatchet, a balloon full of pudding, and a hamster. And I was all, hold my beer, Mike. Okay, I tanked it. I could go pro at wrong. We're talking blue ribbon wrong. You know that feeling? You're throwing elbows like nobody's business. But when you finally get up to the window, you can't sign your name right. And the teller gets to keep your money, which is not legal in any state, Mike assures me. Thank you, Mike, if that is your real name.
All right. That is Crushing It, the title poem, I guess we'll call it, of Jennifer Knox's new collection. And that gives us a little bit of an idea of the kind of thing you do. And I was reading your bio on the Iowa State University website just this morning, and you talked about teaching as a way to support your poetry habit. So take us back in time. When did you discover poetry?
I discovered it after I tried visual art and theater. And it was in the late 80s when poetry slams were very hot. And that's how I stumbled across poetry. And I was not one of those young people who's good at a lot of things. So when I got up to slam, I was doing Teach for America in Houston, Texas. And when I got up and participated in my first slam and won, it really took hold of me. And that's how I found my way into it. And probably about 5 years later, I found a poem of mine. I found out that a poem of mine was being taken in the Best American Poetry Anthology. That year, it was edited by my favorite poet, James Tate. So I thought, well, I haven't got anything better going on, so I better follow this.
Well, and getting into poetry through slam poetry, I think, is interesting because poetry for the page and poetry to be performed, sometimes that's different. So did performing poetry lead you to writing for readers?
Yes, absolutely. The education that slam has given me has reached into so many areas of my life. And poetry on the page is one of them. What slam taught me was that you get the awe faces most often when you put two elements far apart.
What do you mean by that?
When, like, let's say, for example, I have a line with a star in it. And then four lines later, I have a line with a moon in it. And then the listener in the slam setting has to wait until that theme is closed. And the more disparate they are, the further apart, the more they, oh, there it is. Hmm. I see. We're coming around the mountain. Here it is. I feel the payoff right here. If they're back to back, it's not as fun.
So you're creating that discovery, that epiphany.
Absolutely. I'm creating surprise.
Well,
and that's what.
You clearly love surprise in your poetry.
I do love surprise. You found it.
Yeah, it's hard to miss. Well, and the way you talk about writing or teaching to support your poetry habit, it also makes it sound like something that you've tried to give up. Is that true? Is this something that you're compelled to do and you couldn't stop even if you tried?
100%, because certainly nobody takes up poetry for the money. So it is something I'm compelled to do. And the payoff of, there's two payoffs. There's the payoff of writing the poem, which is the talking to yourself side of the brain. It's the same side of the brain that lies come from. So you're in the act of writing, I'm making a game that only I can play and win. Now, editing is a totally different story. That's for other people. And that's its own payoff. To hear, when I hear reviews coming in of the new book, or when people tell me they like the poems, when my non-poet friends say, oh, I really love that poem in your new book, that is its own payoff entirely. And it's much more overwhelming than the act of writing them. I'm actually getting a little trembly just thinking about it. you put all the little boats on the lake, and when they reach people, because writing is such a solitary act.
Yeah.
It's a surprise.
Well, and I'm sure in poetry it may even feel more of a risk to send those little notes in a bottle out to the world. As you mentioned, it's not what you do to get rich. It's not what you do to get famous.
Mm-hmm. And so what are you revealing about yourself? What is my compulsion to do this? Like I said, I'm not good at 100 things. So the fact that I can do this and it makes me feel good when I do it and that other people enjoy it, I have nothing better to do.
Now, I know that you didn't write this collection in the midst of our pandemic. This was something that was well, maybe not well before, but before the pandemic struck us. Although I would love for you to read a poem that hit me really hard because of the pandemic. Mm. And that's Old Women Talking About Death. And I will say that this is a little bit graphic in parts.
Yes.
Yeah. Would you read that for us?
I'd be happy to. This I wrote, my mother's people enter into this and they're from Southern Illinois. And there's dialogue in many of the poems in the book. And my grandmother and my great aunties get to talk. So you'll hear the twang. And also I identify people by an initial, one letter in their name, which is kind of a true crime thing to do. So we have a K, a J, an M, and a Z in here. Old women talking about death. When did I become one of them? I used to roll my eyes at their gory stories. EMTs found a neighbor at the bottom of her basement steps, a head-to-toe hematoma. Use a cane, I told her. Shrugs. Grandma and the great aunts itemized her injuries. Poor dear, how long till she was found? They told their stories picnicking atop our people at the cemetery, atop all the men in our family who died young. The rest disappeared, shrugs, so no stories for them. These days, when I call Kay, she tells me about her friends who are dying or have died since we last spoke, and I feel closer to her. An adult. Yesterday, Jay filled me in on Em's cancer. It's bad, she whispered. I leaned forward. Em's doctors removed her necrotic uterus through her abdomen in two jammy black hunks because her insides had decayed into a sarcomatous tar pit. Then her incision dehisced. I cocked my head. She made a starburst motion over her belly button. Ah, I've heard that happens with cancer, I said. Grateful, Z described the process to me after her stepmother died. Now I even have a name for that indignity. Thank God. I hate surprises.
Like I said, that poem hit me so hard because of the moment that we're living in now. I think that most of us have spent a lot of time thinking about death and illness over the last 9 months. And it, right now, especially, it feels like every day I hear about someone who has died, who has a connection to me, maybe not a close connection, but, you know, a friend's mother-in-law or someone that I've never met, but they're in my social web. And it's interesting how a poem can mean something when you write it and mean something else 6 months later. How does that poem read to you now?
Well, that's a great question, that a poem sort of gains meaning in different contexts, like the rolling stone that gathers the moss. I think that the more specific that, and this is a theory I'm working on, that the more specific art is, the more universal it becomes. And even though this is about people I know and things they have told me in my family, that when you go deep into that very personal space, it opens up a world of possibilities for other people, and that it becomes more relevant in this unprecedented context that we're in right now.
Is this a creative time for you? I've talked to a number of different artists over recent months, and some people seem to find space and inspiration during this time, and others feel shut down by it. How has it affected you?
Well, if cooking, making homemade ice cream, and eating is creative, I'm a champion right now. I'm at my peak. Writing has not, I haven't been able to do it. I've been taking a lot of notes, which I feel that it's going to lead to something different. I don't think any of us are going to come out the other side of this not changed. We're being changed by it right now. So I'm trying to document things that occur to me, and looking into the real life and the nonfiction world around me for what I plan on taking into the next book.
There are a couple of themes that come back again and again in this collection, and hearing you say that makes me think that maybe there was a time before when you've been taking notes. ADHD is one of those themes that shows up in the poem that you read first, but also dementia is another one of those themes. Is that something that you've had to cope with personally?
Absolutely. My father died of Parkinson's disease, and he had Lewy body dementia. And he spent, I think it was less than a year in a memory facility. And many of my people on both sides of the family have, when they died, they had dementia, Lewy body dementia, and ADHD. My stepmother swears that my father had it. And my mother was diagnosed in her 80s with it. She's still with us, but sometimes we laugh at just how ADHD both sides of the family are and how it can be so different to different people. So, yes, this is something that, even without knowing it, that I have seen affect both sides of my family.
By taking those notes and eventually writing poetry about things that are important in your life, does that help you understand them? Does that change how you process them?
Absolutely. It helps me make connections that I wouldn't have made had I not sat down and faced the abyss of the blinking cursor on the word processor. There is something about that act that helps us process trauma and helps us understand the memories we have. That all happens in the act of writing. I don't like to write anything that I already know what's going to happen. And that is something that I learned from Jim Galvin in the Writer's Workshop at the University of Iowa when I was an undergraduate. He said, why would you write anything when you already know what's going to happen? So that act of discovery is also the act of making sense.
And surprising a lot of people along
yes,
the way.
Yes. I always like to be surprised on my end and have one in there for the reader, too.
Jennifer Knox, thank you so much for sharing your collection with us. And you'll be virtually at Prairie Lights tonight in conversation
yes.
with another poet, right?
Yes, with an old friend of mine from grad school, Ada Limon, who won the National Book Award and she won the Guggenheim. And she taught me how to be a better person. She's a very old dear friend. Just wonderful. I can't wait to see her tonight, air quotes.
Well, I'm sure that'll be a wonderful event. It's sponsored by Writers at Grinnell and Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. It's at 7 o'clock, and of course, it is a virtual event. You can find out how to attend on the Prairie Lights Bookstore webpage. And Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Jennifer Knox, her new collection of poetry is called Crushing It. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. The show is produced by Dennis Reese, Caitlin Harrop, Matt Alvarez, Rick Brewer, and our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. You never need to miss an episode. Subscribe to our podcast. Search for Talk of Iowa wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the University of Iowa's John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center and their National Science Foundation iCORE Training Program, helping faculty, staff, and students make an impact with their innovations and research. More at iowajpec.org.